Please welcome Juice.
Jimmy, be quiet. I'm always the best part of it. So I'm going to go ahead and grab this mic because I like to walk around. I want to thank everybody for showing up this afternoon and either skipping your lunch or coming to talk Nitro with me for dessert. First, I'm going to apologize. I was planning on serving beer for this talk, but Nitro Draft in sample cups does not give the beer any justice, so I apologize. That was always one of my favorite things about going to seminars is that they would serve beer. So I apologize ahead of time for that. We talked about earlier on my bio that I work at Oscar Blues. I just got promoted to the head brewer in our Lions facility. And I'm now working on R&D and specialty beers programs and also collaboration beers. So, but prior to that, at the Longmont production facility, I was working on the Nitro program. And when I started working there in 2010, the Nitro beers that we were putting out were undercarbonated beers and then poured with the Nitro Draft faucet. But they weren't being infused with any nitrogen gas, which led to decent conditioning with it sitting at a high head pressure and pouring in the draft system, but it didn't give the beer any justice. To me, it appeared flat, so I wanted to fix that. And working a little bit in Boulder Beer with some on Nitro beers, I was able to come up with a good process to do it in kegs. It's very simple and effective. As long as you have the right equipment, it's not something that's cheap and easy to approach, but the equipment is necessary, and it turns out really well once you give it some time and some love. Doing like one keg at a time, and now we're doing hundreds of barrels at a time of Nitro at the restaurant and serving all over the nation is pretty good for our company, and hold on a sec, I gotta crack this open. So let's continue here. Let's get on with the talk here. So what is a Nitro Draft? And basically, it's just the term nitro is just a reference to the type of gas that's used in the carbonation process. And it defines the difference between nitrogen-infused beers and their CO2 counterparts. A typical nitrogenated beer contains 75% nitrogen, and that should be 25% carbon dioxide. Because, like we do at Oscar Blues, we always go 100% over. So we strive for that excellence. You'll see some blends of nitrogen be 70-30, but in this process, when we're starting with a beer that's coming out of a carboy, there's limited CO2, available CO2 in solution for that beer, and I wanted this to be simple and just use one gas. The way we do it in a production facility is we carbonate the beer, then we introduce nitrogen only to the beer to create the balance. This is something that's easy to do with the equipment that we have, but the simple way to do it would be just to use one gas that you could carbonate the beer with and also pour that beer on your draft system. You're not combining gas combinations. It's just pretty simple with that right there. Nitrogen. Just a couple of tidbits about that. It's an element that forms about 78-79% of the Earth's atmosphere. And one thing that's interesting about that I was reading is if you think about the 75% nitrogen gas makeup of the beer in solution, when that beer is poured and the head is formed, which I'll show some videos here down the slide. You'll see that head likes to, you know, it retains quite well because of the density of the bubbles, and also because it's open to the atmosphere that has almost the same relationship of gas in it. That's kind of interesting. And it's also an inert gas, so it's extremely difficult to put into solution. So high pressure is essential to get that gas to want to stay in that beer. Excuse me, I'm already parched. So the things that are extremely important, and we're going to get right after it now here and talk about, you know, some of the main things that we need to do. Choosing the right beer. In my experience, I've nitroed lots of different styles, anywhere from a Pilsner all the way to 11% Imperial Stout. In my experience, the Pilsners and light-bodied beers like that lack the mouthfeel and body, don't turn out that well, no matter how well you apply the gas principles to it, because I just think that the nitrogen plays really well with a good malt backbone. So that's why you see a lot of places do porters, stouts, barley wines. We have a beer called Goodnight, which is an Imperial Red, and that beer is dry hopped, and I think it's fantastic on nitro. It's my personal favorite, actually, because it really accents the malt character and also allows those hop aromas to pop. So also, use finish uncarbonated beer. In the past, I've started with a carbonated beer and tried to change the gas makeup of that, and it's extremely tricky, and the whole goal is to provide an easy method for people to do at home. And without the abilities to measure the gas with fancy equipment and stuff, you're basically going to go off of how does the beer taste. Before we got all this fancy equipment, I spent hours drinking nitro beer. And it was work, because I was clocked in. But what happens is you get used to finding, certain varieties will taste flat to you. Certain varieties taste with that mouth feel that you're looking for, that silky, creamy, smooth play on between the two gases. So you're just building a relationship. And again, that's why the 75 and 25% gas makeup is huge. Clarity is also key. The beers that I'll be pouring in the nitro chub that we did, this three slides and three videos that I have there, I decided to use unfiltered beer, obviously, because you're not going to be filtering your beer at home. And if you are, that's awesome. So I decided to use unfiltered beer, and one of the issues I ran into one of the kegs was there's a high yeast content that had settled out into the keg. When pouring that beer through a nitro faucet, there is a restrictor plate. It's a small disc that it has holes in it that is in the actual nitro tap. What happened is that those holes get clogged and restrict flow of the actual beer coming out. So make sure that your beer is clear. You can pull it off the yeast, put in secondary, get it at a cold, crashed temperature. We'll get more into temperatures and pressures here down the line. You also want to allow for proper headspace. I used 4 gallons of finished beer in a 5-gallon keg. I just wanted a nice, even number to create enough headspace where I could pack that headspace full of pressure and allow that pressure to be forced into the liquid. The luxury of, brewing at home is you can scale your recipes that way to brew a 4-gallon batch of this porter that you want to do and allow it to, have the proper headspace, and that way that pressure will drive that gas right into solution. So some of the equipment that we'll need is obviously you need a keg. I use a Sankey keg, but Corny kegs work as well. You just need a vessel to hold a beer in that can hold pressure and allow proper gas flow in. You'll need a tap and proper gas fittings. obviously, corner keg, you know, you just need to be able to send gas into the headspace, and you'll need a 75-25 blend gas tank and the regulator that goes with that. This regulator is different than your standard CO2 regulator, as it is a male fitting, and there's adapters that you can get at your local gas shops or homebrew shops. So when you go to purchase this blend gas, you'll have to make sure that you have the proper regulator to control the flow. And like I already spoke about previously, the nitro faucet is essential because this is what you're going to pour your beer through. You can also use that to determine if you had achieved the right gas quality yet. And obviously, hoses and gaskets, I prefer braided hoses as they do well with high pressure. And they're safer, so we don't want anybody to have any soft plastic hoses rupturing when they're trying to make nitro in the garage. So, excellent. Moving forward here. So this is a piece of equipment that I use. It's just a quick connect gas fitting with a ball valve on it that threads into the gas side of the Sankey tap. I like to have the ball valve there and the quick connect. It's just easy for me to use. This is something that is a little advanced. You could get it done with just the hose and the proper threads to go from the gas tank to the gas inlet of the tap or into the gas inlet of your corny keg. The other piece of equipment, obviously, here is the Sankey tap with a couple of the valves in place. And there's the nitro faucet right there. This is, if you nitrogenate a beer and you pour it through a regular tap system, without having that restrictor plate, you're not going to get the breakout of gas, and you're going to lose that character that you worked so hard putting it into. Also, you know, these threads right here all match up with the valve and the top and gas inlet here. It also threads onto this post as what you find would be fixed into your draft system. There's threads right on there, and I literally just take this with me into the cooler once I've worked on the conditioning aspect of the beer, and I will pour a pint before putting it on a draft system, and it'll allow you to get a good visual and a good sensory on how that is turning out. So let's talk here about the carbonation process. So like I mentioned earlier, I used 4 gallons of beer to create that headspace, which is essential. 4.5 gallons, you could probably get away with that. You just want to create headspace and allow that to get forced into solution. I also had the storage pressure at 40 psi coming out of the blend tank. So the things that are important are your pressure and your temperature and your time. The best method is to have the beer as cold as possible. So as cold as you can get your beer fridge. The best results that I had were closer to the 33 degree range. I also did a few kegs at about 40 and 42 degrees. Those achieved lower end spec gas values. So, you know, if you can't get your fridge, you know, down into the 30s, that's still okay. You might need to leave it gassing a little more longer or so. In 5 days, so I took my blend gas, I tapped a keg with 40 psi of pressure going into the keg, the head, and between 30 and 40 degrees. For 5 days, I checked and poured samples and measured the volumes. And what was achieved was the right combination of CO2 volumes versus nitrogen parts per million. So, and that's starting with an uncarbonated flat beer. So it was easy because it was sitting in a cold environment, clear, you know, clear beer, 40 PSI. I did check half of the kegs at 3 days. And the ones that were closer to the 33-degree range were close and well-specced as far as their gas values, but the extra days of sitting at that high pressure allowed it to be perfect, to be something that you would expect to see pour professionally out in the market. So, pretty simple stuff. I mean, you know, what you're doing really is you're just creating this head pressure that'll drive the gas in the solution. And at 40 PSI, 5 days at a cold temperature, I mean, you're good to go. Pouring the beer, like I said, is really important with the fact that you need a nitro draft faucet. So what you're doing is once the beer is conditioned and finished and you think that you have those 5 days of time ready to go, you can then hook the blend gas up with the keg and your draft faucet to your draft system. How I had the hose set up, this, if you don't have a draft tower or anything fancy like that, just have this sitting in the keg in the cooler, and you can literally just open that tap up and pour the beer really easily and have it be just fine. I mean, just by, and I'll show you a couple videos that'll show you how we just poured it right from here. And it turned out extremely well. So, some blend gases have a 60 and 40 blend. I've tried using the 60-40 blend before, and what happens with that is it drives too much CO2 into solution, and you're ending up with a half glass of foam. And that's because the CO2 creates a lot of larger bubbles that combine and bind to the nitrogen bubbles, which makes it really foamy over heady beer. So that's why the 75 and 25 blend is really, really important. And you just pour the beer out of your fridge that you had conditioned it and gassed it in. So what we're going to do here is we're going to take a look at our first video. So I have three examples. The first example that I'm going to show you here is one keg that was tapped at 40 PSI for 2 days. And I just wanted to see if I could determine if that was the low end of timing where I could get the right conditioning, doing it a faster time, you know? So what this keg had was, it had some CO2 in solution. It's a little bit low and below the appropriate values. The nitrogen was picked up fairly well, and you'll notice it through the cascade that you can see, but it just doesn't compare with giving it a little bit more time. So if you see, once the pour, you can see the release of, you know, the cascade and the nitrogen start to break out of solution. It'll form that liquid level right here. So you can still visually see that there's nitrogen in solution. And at a fast rate, though, so if you're pouring your beer and you... it pours similar to this as far as the timing of the cascade. And one thing you'll notice too is that's important and that I just got to recognize is the size of the head retention following the pour. So now, you know, the beer has finished its cascade. There's your head retention. Combination of CO2 and nitrogen are in there, but it's not quite, you know, it wasn't quite there. Like drinking this beer, had kind of a flat character. The mouthfeel wasn't quite there. So you knew that rushing the time frame of it didn't quite get it all the way to proper conditioning. So this next video, this keg was conditioned at 33 degrees for 5 days, 40 pounds of pressure on the keg. And you're definitely going to see a difference in cascade and head retention. The CO2 was at the higher end of what I consider to be the right specifications based on my experience with how many different gas volumes I've kind of tasted and seen poured throughout the years. You notice how visually you can see largest CO2 bubbles on the top of the head, and you can see how dense that gas is in that beer in solution and how slow it is breaking out. It's a huge difference than the previous video, as you can tell by how that liquid line is starting to rise up, and it's slowly releasing the nitrogen out of solution. Because the CO2 was a little bit high on this one, it's going to leave at the end of the cascade a larger head. It's valuable. I've tried to just put only nitrogen into the beer, and the cascade, it looks fantastic, and it starts off with a pretty decent head retention. But what happens is that head just dissipates really easily because nitrogen is an inert gas. It does not want to stay into the liquid. And without that CO2 kind of combination, it's going to be extremely hard to get the right balance. I mean, this is still slowly moving its way out. I mean, you can see it's still rising up. And I think what happened with this thing is, so as far as a couple of troubleshooting points, if you start with a beer that has high CO2 levels and you use the 75-25 blend, you're going to create too high of a CO2 volume with that. So the key is to really just make sure that you have minimal CO2 volume in solution. You don't want to have a beer that's been in a keg and created natural pressure and natural CO2 in there, because if you start with that high level of CO2, then the balance you're going to put into it is going to be a little bit off. So you can see that's pretty heady. It tasted great, had the great nitrogen mouthfeel. And because of the slight increased CO2, the head retention is a little bit larger. Obviously, it's not a huge issue, because the idea behind this is I prefer to have the nitros pour in a single pour. Some restaurants, I've seen Guinness poured in three stages. Well, they'll pour a third of the glass, let it settle, scoop out some of the head, and pour another third, let it settle, and then they're just spooning off this great protein and the head retention that you've worked so hard while making the beer, and they're getting rid of something that creates an amazing mouthfeel. So the whole goal is to find the right combination of gases, and the uncarbonated beer with that blend will get you the right combination, so that way you don't have to mess around with introducing CO2 and taking nitrogen in and out. It gets tricky that way when you're playing around with gases that way. So this video right here is again a keg that we did 4 gallons stored at 33 degrees and 40 psi head pressure for 5 days, and this keg I made sure had as little carbonation starting in the original beer as possible, because the last pour, I know that if I by looking at it visually and seeing that large head retention, that there was too much CO2 started. So I made sure that this keg in itself had as little CO2 possible to start with. What happened is that the final gas makeup of it was a little bit less CO2 and equal amounts of nitrogen put in there. So I was able to get to achieve the same nitrogen volumes, you know, same pressure, same temperature, but because the CO2 volume I started with was a little bit lower, I think it led to the really perfect blend of gas. So you can see it's quite comparable to the previous pour, where there's a little bit larger CO2 bubbles on the top there, and you're seeing the slow breakout of gas, but with a little bit less CO2, the nitrogen's able to rise through the beer and release. So that's what it's trying to do. That's the release of the gas bubbles out through the liquid. So, looking at these videos, I mean, I've timed final pour, I've timed how long that cascade takes and tried to base it off that originally. That's something you can do at home, and I think that's how I used to base all my methods on, is if it cascaded for over a minute, then it was pretty solid. That tells you that there's a good amount of nitrogen in solution, and then you know you're just waiting for it to settle out to see that head retention. If this headline right there was down to here, you'd know you'd have half a glass of head. That means the CO2 was too high, and I mentioned in troubleshooting that earlier is starting with the lower CO2 volume to make that work. And you can see, I mean, this is probably a minute 45 video, and it's still slowly releasing out through here. And what I did afterwards is I took these three beers that we poured, and I want to give a shout out to my 8-year-old son, who was the person pouring these beers. And trust me, no underage drinking was achieved during these videos. So, and no animals were harmed either as well. But letting them sit side by side. The one on the left, obviously, is the one that was under carbed, and you can tell by how that head retention just really isn't anything left. I mean, granted, it was the first one that I poured, but with the right combination of gases, you're looking at these two were comparable. This one had the higher CO2 level, and it's already losing a little bit of its you know, head retention there and the binding of the gases. So the combination of gases is huge, and here is the last one I poured, and these are extremely similar as far as gas makeup. And so a couple of things that are important here that I want to make sure that I reiterate. Talk about is, if you want to choose the right beer, you don't have to. I'm not telling you you have to do stouts and porters like I recommended. Be creative. You can try anything you want. I never nitroed a sour beer, but I do know that I think something that would be really good would be like an Abbey or maybe some type of Belgian malty beer, Doppelbock, dark lager, strong lagers, box and stuff. So that way that nitrogen can play off that really well. I can't express the importance of starting with a extremely low carbonated beer, and it has to be clear. The clarity is essential, so you don't have any potential yeast clogging the pouring process. So we ran into an issue where we were filming these videos. I couldn't pour some of the kegs because of the yeast that had settled in the bottom of the keg, and it was just clogging the restrictor plate in the nitro tap, and it was making it impossible to pull liquid through. So we had to back flush, clean out the nitro tap, which is, you know, if you run into those issues, that's something that you would need to do. You know, realize that that's an issue. As long as you have plenty of gas and in solution, we have a pretty short distance draft line at our tasting room. It's not as long as some of the typical restaurants that you'll see, and we pour our 75-25 blend finished nitro beers between 25 and 30 PSI. So this will maintain that character that you're putting in at 40. And also, towards the end of the keg, once the keg is running a little bit low, there is some examples of that beer starting to kind of turn a little bit flat, and maximizing that PSI and keeping that pressure high while you're pouring the draft is very, very important, because if you go a little bit on that lower end, you'll start to lose gas into the headspace of that keg as you're pulling that liquid out, and as the keg gets emptier and emptier. So besides recommending drinking it faster, you want to make sure that you're maximizing that high pressure in there. I mean, it's an inert gas. It doesn't even want to be in liquid in general. It wants to be in our atmosphere, and it wants to come out easily. So the pressure is very, very important on driving that liquid and maintaining that gas in solution. And let's see here. So we're a little on the short side here, but I'm going to open it up for some questions, and feel free to ask any type of process stuff. As I've worked on this in a small scale, large scale, and I can help you maybe work through your system. So,
yeah. Hi. Great talk. For those of us that are trying to get the nitrogen right, this is really good. So is there nothing in the beer itself that would affect these numbers that you've given us, like a type of beer that might have more of a head naturally?
Well, I mean, yeah, you think about, you know, how much protein is in a specific beer. Protein and dextrins and, you know, and sugar profile play a factor into this. The denser, a liquid, the harder it is to drive gas into. I had to really work hard to get our gas makeup into our Imperial Stout, which is viscous and high alcohol. So I literally was shaking the keg, which if you shake the head pressure in a keg, it'll push that into that pressure into the liquid. But beers that are viscous and have, you know, high sugar content take a little bit more time and maintain that pressure. You know, patience is one of those things that you gotta kind of gotta work with. And that's the only difference right there. I mean, I've done everything from, like I said, a Pilsner to Imperial Stouts, and the ones in the middle of the road of that, you know, that have nice clean finish and aren't too residually sweet, work the best. But it is still possible, especially with that high pressure.
So if you don't mind, one more question.
Sure.
If you go over, so let's say you get too much CO2 in the beer, you know.
Right.
Just some thoughts on how you bring that back or fix that besides just pulling the pressure off.
Well, the thing with the blend gas, though, is, you know, if you pull that pressure off and you put the same blend back into it, ideally you might put the same gas ratio back in. The way we would fix that is we would just put in straight nitrogen if the CO2 is so high. So you're scrubbing the CO2 out with straight nitrogen to bring that CO2 volume down. So that's why I mentioned it a bunch, is, and you know, an uncarbonated flat beer is key, because you can just do the one gas, one method, you know, without getting, I mean, I made a keg, Nitro Death by Coconuts, one of our beers that we make, and it was a fully carbonated beer. And so I had to go in with straight nitrogen and push all of that CO2 out till I got to the right volume. And so you're playing a crazy game with that. It's difficult just with a single blend. But you can get, I mean, extremely, extremely close, and pour something that's definitely acceptable just using the 75-25. So, yes.
All right, I got two questions also. Have you found any problems with typical corny kegs, the pressure relief valve with 40 pounds?
I don't have a lot of experience with corny kegs, but you have to make sure that you have, you know, proper, the fittings are all secure. Mm-hmm. You can get good conditioning at a lesser lesser pressure. So what you would want to do is, if you wanted to, if you felt uncomfortable using that high of PSI, you could use 35 or 30, but you want to maximize how cold that beer is going to be. So if you can only control a couple of the variables, and pressure is something that you want to decrease for safety reasons, then you want to make sure that beer is as cold as possible, and you might need to give it a little more time on pressure. So,
okay, good. And second question, how does serving temperature affect your finished product?
It doesn't extremely well, because as long as you're really maintaining that higher PSI and pouring through the right nitro faucet, we condition our beers just above freezing, and we pour them in our tasting room out of kegs in a mid 40 degree temperature, your normal walk-in cooler temperature, and we don't have any issues with that. You will possibly see towards the end, like I mentioned, when as you're down to the last half gallon or so, a lack of lower gas makeup, because the beer is warmer and the headspace is drastically increased. You could be losing gas into that. So the best thing to do is just maximize that temperature as much as possible, as much as you're able to. So
all right, and drink fast.
Yeah, and drink faster. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You understand that cost is probably prohibitive, but what's your opinion on using a blend box to actually achieve your ratios versus a pre-blended gas canister?
Like a regular gas box?
Yeah.
The key is just the ratio, is the percentage. The reason why that pre-blended gas works is because it gives you the right amount of CO2 volume and the right amount of nitrogen volume with just one particular gas. So if you were to change the blend box ratio, if you're pouring all your drafts off one particular box, and it makes it difficult. That's why this is something that takes a little bit of additional equipment and stuff like that to do. We pour all our regular beers, our CO2 beers, off of 60/40, and we only isolate the nitro draft to the 75/25. So it's always conditioned with that gas, and it's poured with that gas. I'm at the pressures that I had mentioned. So,
thank you.
Yep.
Hi, I have two questions. The first one is, what's the difference between a regular CO2 regulator and a nitro one? I mean, because you mentioned that you need the proper regulator to
relation. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the relationship's key, because I mentioned the CO2 plays a factor into mouthfeel, and also binds with the nitrogen is for the head retention. So too much CO2 will create a half glass of foam. Just like when you overcarbonate your beer at home, or you've had an overcarbonated beer in the market, too much CO2 just pours way too heady.
My question is, the regulator itself has itself.
Oh.
Yeah. You mentioned that, can I use a normal regulator?
Yeah, normal gas regulator. You can purchase those at your gas supply store. So you go there and say, I want to buy a 75/25 blend gas tank, 75 nitrogen, and then they'll be able to set you up with a proper regulator to pour.
Okay.
If you have a regulator that's for a CO2 tank,
Those
two regulators don't work with each other.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you need a special regulator for the blend, nitro blend gas. Yeah, it has a male fitting.
Okay.
Versus the female fitting that a CO2 typically has.
Okay. Also, and my last question.
There is an adapter that you could.
Okay.
So you, instead of buying a separate regulator, you could just thread in this male adapter into your existing CO2 regulator, which would hook up to the tank. So that's a cost effective method of just kind of changing the regulator that you currently have.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Perfect.
Thanks, my wife, for reminding me about that.
The other one is, have you tried...
High pressure. Yeah. Oh, it's a good point. Yeah, the pressure dial that you have on that regulator has to be able to go to a high pressure.
Okay.
So if it pins out at 40, But you could also just, that's something you could swap out too. So that's another thing you would really like to consider too, is the fact that you want to make sure that you can put the proper PSI into the keg.
Okay. And the other question was, have you tried to nitro a beer with the carbonation stone?
Does
it work? Or?
Carbonation stone, if you this is something that I wanted to provide for everybody as a simple method, just using head pressure. Mm-hmm. But carbonation stone works at a lot faster rate. 30 PSI running through a carbonation stone into a keg, if you have that set up, you could probably get at a cold temperature, at a 33, 34 degree, you could probably achieve the same gas volumes within a couple of hours.
Oh.
I mean, just like you would force carbonate, something else. It's just this talk was just geared to make it simple and a little more cost effective and without having the carbonation stone. But that's a faster way to achieve those methods.
Okay. Well, thanks.
So if you were trying to do a little more cost effective way, I've read people using argon and other inert gases other than nitro to push, and then they're carbonating their beers ahead of time to a lower volume. Is there a specific volume of CO2 that you see work better if you weren't using a 75-25 blend?
Like a starting CO2 volume?
Exactly. Like if you were just carbonating and then you were going to push it with another gas.
So I have all the number answers, but my company said, "Juice, make sure you don't give away all our secrets." So I will give you a range that I like to use. So without giving you an exact number, if you're going to start with the CO2 volume and introduce a separate gas, whether it's argon or nitrogen, if you want to go that route, you'd start with a CO2 volume that's 1.5-ish volumes, because as you're introducing the other gas, you'll scrub out the CO2 and replace it with nitrogen. So you want to start a little higher on your CO2 volume, and as you introduce the other gas, you're going to scrub out that CO2 volume and bring it down to the level where you would like it, which an awesome number to end at is right around 1 volumes of CO2. Okay. Without giving the number.
Gotcha. Yeah. Appreciate it. Thank you.
And that, 1.1 and 1.2, you'll see a foamier beer, and a little bit below, and then in the 0.8, 0.9s, you'll see a flat beer.
Thank you.
Just don't tell anybody, all right? I don't get in trouble for this.
So if you know that you're going to make a nitro beer, is there any recipe changes you would make? Because the nitro is going to affect the mouthfeel and the flavor perception.
I mean, I wouldn't change the recipes, because I've worked the beers with the same recipe and just gassed them, without having to change anything. But that's why I mentioned beers that have a maltier, backbone to them just gravitate better towards a nitro style beer, because there's something for those dissolved nitrogen gases to grab onto. If a beer is really dry and really thin as far as body, like a session pale, you might not get that rich, creamy character that you look for out of it, because of the lack of sugars and other things that give beers, a malty, body. So that's why it just work well. But you can try anything, and it's worth it. I mean, I nitroed a Pilsner, and it was awful, and I won't do it again, because I had this vision, and then I could never get it to taste the way I thought it was supposed to, no matter how I worked those volumes, so.
And was there any beer style that you tried on nitro that surprised you, that you thought it wasn't going to be very good and change your
Dale's
mind?
Pale Ale, just good old, Dale's Pale Ale, normal recipe. It's a huge, we do small batches of it, and it's a huge hit. The hops really come out, and the bitterness is accented, but it's not astringent, and there's still enough crystal malt backbone to that beer for that gas to really hold on to and grab onto. So, IPAs, I think, are incredible. Mountain Sun Brewery in Boulder does a lot of hoppy nitro beers, and they have great success with that, and we do too as well. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Can you talk about packaging a little bit? Do you think it's possible for us to accomplish that 75-25 blend, either in bottles at home or if we were able to can?
So, you know, the way we package a can is we introduce liquid nitrogen post-fill and pre-seam. That dose of liquid nitrogen turns in the gas and then fills the widget that's fixed in the bottom of the can, which releases when you open it. I know that Left Hand does their nitro stuff without in a bottle, without any widgets or any type of gassing mechanisms. I think that I'm not sure how the filling would work, but to me it would be similar as when you would fill a keg. As you know, it goes down the stem, it rises up. If you could have those volumes, like I mentioned, and how to get the right conditioned draft, and you tried bottling it. I mean, the idea would it to be just to make sure that you have, those bottles pressurized. Sorry, yeah, I should turn my phone off. It was my reminder to make sure that I talked to this point. So I feel pretty good. Thanks for the questions. I really appreciate it. So I would just I'd give it a shot. I mean, I wouldn't invest a whole run. I mean, I would try a few bottles of and see how they hold up. But I'd be interested to see if you could package a homebrew system bottles that way. So
like, for example, using a Blickman beer gun.
Yeah.
Same idea.
Yeah, same idea. Yeah, you just that ratio, is just, it works for getting both volumes in a solution in an easy way, in a single gas way.
So, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
When working with nitro, any changes in pour tube volume conventions? You know, like it looked like you had like 5 or 6 feet of tube between the keg and the tap. Is it about the same as you would do on a CO2 system?
It's about the same. I mean, you could. We pour on a 30-foot system in our draft. I've also had a shorter line than the one I showed in the slide. And it all pours the same. That's why it's key to have that pressure be as high as I mentioned, just to maintain, because that pressure is going to keep that flow consistent. If the beer in the line warms up and starts degassing in the line, so if you don't have your lines not cooled, you might see some foamier initial pours until that line clears through. It'll spit, and then the cold beer coming out of the keg will be very consistent. So you have to watch out for that beer warming up in the line and everything. So,
thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. That's it. Well, thanks, everybody. Appreciate you guys coming out to the interview.